With some physicians who had questions for our panel on treating childhood obesity. One had a concern about denial.
What do I do when it's obvious that a child and family do not feel that there's a problem?
It's a big problem. I mean, you have to, again, get that number. And what I do, and of course, by the time they come to me, they're often referred already for overweight or obesity. So maybe it's easier. Since I'm a specialist, but we show where they are on that plot and try to start to engage the conversation and, you know, really deal with some of the major issues of what we're concerned about, the health issues, try to get a feeling of what is the lifestyle of that child and the family. Mm-hmm. You probably already know maybe some of the issues with the family, mm-hmm. a good family history, and then start really being able to make some conversation, some in-road conversation. And I don't want to see somebody leave my office without at least we're going to start to some problem solving. I mean, where are we going to go with this?
Yeah. You know, ultimately, though, you really have to respect where the families and the children are. If you get the sense that they're not ready to do this, then you have to acknowledge that. But you have a professional responsibility to say, you know, this is my advice that, you know, you should be thinking about the weight and you should be thinking about making changes.
Extremely important to open the dialogue. We have another question from a physician. This one has a different concern.
What do I do when the parents insist there is a medical problem causing a child to be overweight?
Refer to me.
Well, that happens all the time. I mean, we have a responsibility to do a physical examination and to look for any comorbidities or other signs and symptoms. But oftentimes parents need to understand that this is not something that we can do a blood test and give a medication and fix.
Right.
And I was kidding. Don't refer to me. I mean, I think the last thing that you want to think about is just, oh, well, just send it off to some subspecialist, a cardiologist, an endocrinologist. I think one of the real keys in pediatric endocrinology is the overweight child, you know, rule out thyroid, rule out Cushing's. These are really, really rare causes of obesity. And in those instances, linear growth is affected. So you know on your growth chart, you've already watched that weight, you've watched that height. If that height's coming up with that weight, you actually don't need to do an endocrine workup in a growing child.
Right, exactly.
So what about families? What about their difficulty in addressing this issue of childhood obesity?
Parents really need a lot of skills and knowledge, things that we can share with them during well-child visits, starting at a very early age. For example, I think it's very important that children, that parents understand that children have an instinctive ability to indicate when they're hungry and to stop eating when they're full. In our abundant food environment, if children believe that they have to clean their plate, they're going to end up eating too much food.
I think a lot of families, you know, you've got a plate, you fill it, and you're an adult, this is how much you would eat, and you put it in front of a three-year-old and think that's the amount they should eat. So portion, really understanding portions, I think, is critical. Right, and those plates just keep getting bigger, and we just keep putting more and more food on it. Because it's really the parent's responsibility to have the right foods and the right quantities, and then it's a child's responsibility to decide how much to eat.
Exactly. There's oftentimes a tendency to cross that boundary. Also, and I think you are too, Phil, I'm really big on the family dinner table, the family meal time. It's such an important time for modeling, as you were talking about, Fran, but I think it's also really important for modeling communication and making deeper connections.
That's
true.
Well, you sort of addressed this, but certainly the home environment can present some barriers to children really getting the proper healthy physical eating and physical activity. Could you address that a little bit more specific to the home environment, Dr. May?
I think we have to face facts that families are under stress. Very busy. They have a lot going on. Oftentimes, one or both parents are working. Sometimes we don't even have both parents in the household. The children might be involved in sports or lessons. So there's a certain amount of activity that's going on that can make it difficult to prepare a meal, sit down together, sometimes even to shop. Not to mention the fact that in some situations, it's parents may not have the nutrition knowledge or may not have the availability of fresh fruits and vegetables and other things that they can choose for their families.
You know, another big factor in the home environment is the whole issue of televisions and screens. Kids, you know, spending time in their bedrooms locked away in front of a TV screen is, you know, a recent event, and it's a major
third
event.
Of 2 to 6-year-olds have a TV in their bedroom. Mm-hmm. So what do you expect to happen if you've got a TV in your bedroom? You're going to watch it. Mm-hmm. And then there's computers, there's the video games, and it's really easy to have your kids gone.
And a lot of families now eat meals in front of a television.
Mm-hmm. What about the role of the built environment as well as the community in general?
Well, I've done a lot of work now in 2 areas in Los Angeles, South and East LA, impoverished areas, mainly minority areas. And you can look at the number of grocery stores. There's about a third the number of grocery stores in those areas compared to the rest of Los Angeles. Green space, almost non-existent. So a playground is a fenced-in area that may have a no-dumping sign on it. And, you know, we've got to really look at what does that mean. We know parents are spending all their time inside the car. Kids aren't walking to school. I mean, the number of kids even walking a few blocks is almost negligible.
You know, and we're always wondering about this issue of non-compliance. You know, why don't patients follow through with our advice? Well, certainly if we tell people, eat healthy, get more physical activity, but they don't have the ability to do that because there's no opportunity, then we're essentially setting them up for failure. Just like, you know, as Francine was saying, if you don't have a place to walk, it doesn't do any good for us to say, walk, if they can't do it. Mm-hmm. So the built environment is really this whole other piece that makes it possible for someone to be successful. And this is really, you know, kind of this whole idea of community health. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of this combination of opportunity, availability of the built environment, and then that affects their ability to behave in a healthy fashion. And then the other piece is community health centers. Okay, as part of community health, having community recreation centers is another powerful way for children to get physical activity, and that's one of the things that studies support. And for certain populations, as we referred to before, that's a very major opportunity.